If listeners of the podcast were able to catch episode one of this year, you met Jeremy Oskins. He's a teacher in Comanche, Texas, and he and I talked about his classroom, which is preparing students for automobile technology and you know, going into the trades. In that conversation, we talked about the pervasive need across the entire country for students to be in skilled trades. And of course, that's something that probably on your local level, you've seen that happen. If you have to get a home repair done, an auto worked on, or anything like that, it's probably hard to find people sometimes. So the real question is, how do we actually reach students at the right time with the right information so that they can make informed decisions about how they want to shape the remainder of their K-12 experience and maybe even what they do after that? We're going to be discussing that topic in Teaching Matters, and actually this is the first of a two-part series that's discussing this idea of aptitude testing and how to use that to drive vocational socialization among students.
Welcome to Teaching Matters, a podcast exploring all things teaching and learning. Teaching Matters is produced by NPR affiliate WOUB Public Media in Athens, Ohio. And here is your host, Dr. Scott Titsworth, Dean of the Scripps College of Communication at Ohio University.
My guests today on Teaching Matters are Edson Barton. He's the CEO and co-founder of U-Science, an educational technology company. And also joining us is Candace Sears. She's the Director of Instructional Services at the Montgomery County Educational Services Center near Dayton, Ohio. Candace and Edson, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's great to meet both of you.
Thank you, Scott. Thanks for inviting us to be a part of this conversation.
Yes, thanks, Scott. We're excited to be here.
And it's also kind of exciting for me because usually in a podcast, I have one of you on, and it's great to have both the person representing the company and also a school to talk about this at the same time. Edson, let me start with you to talk about U-Science briefly. What is the origin story of your company? Why did you work with a partner to found it? What is it that you're trying to accomplish with the company?
Yeah, the real crux of it was, I guess going back to my own childhood, I was kind of a student that was an A or D student. There really was no middle ground in that. And because of that, when I graduated and kind of went on in life, I felt very disenchanted with education. And even in post-secondary, as I got into that, and I started to really question why, what was really driving that? And as the years went on, I was experienced with some other programs. We started to do some research around this connection between industry and education. And we found that even very small instances where we would get involved with a student and make that connection stronger, it improved so many things about the student or about the student's life. And so as we started to do more and more interventions that way, the improvements started to compound and they got bigger and bigger to the point now where if you do some very strategic things with students just to make that connection between industry and education very strong, everything in that student's life improves. Their home life improves, their social emotional learning improves, their graduation rates improve, their college enrollment rates and their college persistence rates improve as well. It's amazing what happens once we make those connections.
Before I bring Candace into the conversation, when I was reading literature about U-Science, there's a phrase that you use on your website that's really important to this conversation. It's the career exposure gap. Can you kind of define that for the listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. We're also very narrowly focused. As adults, even, we think that we know so much. But if you were to ask an adult, any adult, what are the jobs around you that are different careers that people do? Usually people can only list like 10, 15 at most, and they're all the most common ones that we already all know. You take that down to a student and they know even less, right? Mm-hmm. And so the opportunity for us to really understand what's available to us and then what are we capable of doing is a huge gap. out there. Mm-hmm. And so most students, for example, they'll say, or they'll guide themselves towards social work. They'll guide themselves to arts and entertainment work. They'll guide themselves to doctors or to police work or community service work, because those are the things that they know. From the time they were little, they were told be a doctor, be a police officer, right, be a firefighter. Those were all exciting careers for them. And so as they grow up, they stereotype and pigeonhole themselves into those very narrow things. So our goal, by using different tools, and in particular aptitudes, is the ability to look at an individual and expose them to a larger world based on their individual talents. Mm-hmm. And that's something that really opens the eyes of individuals, because most of them in the school system, they're graded so often, right? You either do this well or you don't do this well, right? And we're able to open this up to them and say, here's possibility. Mm-hmm. And so that's really the gap there between what's available to them and what do they actually know?
And we'll get deeper into what that looks like as the discussion unfolds. But Candace, let me bring you into the conversation. You work for an ESC, and that's those are throughout the state of Ohio. They're sometimes called different things in other states. But can you kind of describe how ESCs function in Ohio and what the role is that you have with your partner school districts?
Sure. Thank you, Scott. So as an educational service center here in Ohio, there are 51 of us across the state of Ohio, and we serve and support the districts within our county. We are county-based. We have 16 public districts here in Montgomery County. We did have a governor a few years back who allowed ESCs to, or allowed districts, all districts have to align with an ESC. And our governor, previous governor, had opened that up where districts could choose which ESC they wanted to be aligned with. And so it's really important to us that, like, as the fourth largest ESC in the state of Ohio, there's plenty of work for all ESCs. Mm-hmm. And so we work very closely with our neighboring ESCs as well. But here we really provide any types of added supports that districts may need. And in Montgomery County, we always say that we're kind of like a microcosm of the state. We have 16 public districts. They're all very different. We have urban, suburban, rural. We have a district that sits right outside of the city of Dayton that has a little under 300 kids that's in a rural area. So a really beautiful landscape with lots of different opportunities for kids. And there we provide multiple supports. We do have a focus right now, anything that's aligned to future readiness of kids and giving kids future hope. We have a superintendent here that's really about future self-vision. If we can help kiddos have a future self-vision, that's what it's about, because a lot of our kids, they don't see themselves in the future. And so how do we help support that? And then we leverage the work that we do and the work that districts need that they may not have the capacity to do or the know-how or the time in that moment, we support them. So it may be professional development, it may be providing coaches out in schools, it may be just consultation, it may be providing student-facing programs to help support some of the unique needs within the county.
And does your ESC have a, so like in Southeast Ohio where I'm at, we have an actual building that is our Career and Technical Education Center for students that the high schools would feed into. Is that similar in Montgomery County?
Yeah, we have a Miami Valley CTC that sits here in our county. It isn't directly affiliated with us as an educational service center. It is a separate school, career tech school. And a lot of our students in our 16 districts get to take advantage of the services that they have there. We have a lot of students. It's a cutting edge career tech school here in the county, which we're grateful to have here. We have a lot of students that go there. We have a lot of students that may not get in just because of capacity based. So we've really been focusing on how do we help support kids that may not get in? How do we create that opportunity in their home district, as well as then leveraging and potentially helping prepare them to get into the CTC?
Mm-hmm. You've sort of touched on this already, but obviously when you engaged in a partnership with U-Science, you were trying to solve some sort of a problem or enhance a strength that you had. Can you kind of talk through what the reason was that led you into wanting to go down this path of providing more resources you know, to be able to, you know, have these discussions with students and to connect with your community partners?
Yeah, so I think for us, the initial launch with YouScience was, we are really, you know, we wanted data. We wanted data to see, like, who are the students in which we serve throughout the county, throughout the region, and what are their interests? What are their aptitudes? How do we really support our schools? And even for us as an educational service center, how do we better understand our population? And how do we then connect that to some of the in-demand careers within our region to create an alignment and be a little bit more intentional? I always like to use the word intentional with providing students experiences. So our schools do a beautiful job of hosting career fairs. Maybe it's in the middle school years or the high school years. Lunch and learns are really popular. But how do we use data to create a more intentional connection for our students?
Mm-hmm. Edson, so YouScience, the platform that she's been talking about, is the aptitude testing. How do you all operationalize that? I think that, you know, many of us have had experience with, you know, different types of assessments that, you know, would lead towards, hey, you should look into this job. But you all have, you know, been developing your version of that for years now. What does yours look like? How do you try to design that in a way that provides a valid and reliable, you know, set of data for particular students?
Yeah, I think some of the easiest ways to describe it, first and foremost, it's all delivered online. So aptitude testing isn't new. It's been around for a long time. There's been some really deep, great research in there. But it's very intensive. And so it usually is done one-on-one with a counselor that's been trained, professional, and they sit across from the student and they'll ask a bunch of questions, they'll have them perform tasks, all these types of things. It's a half day or a full day worth of exercises, and then somebody sits down, writes a report, and comes up with your aptitudes. It's very expensive to do that, right? Anywhere from $500 to $1,000 to sit down and do that. And so what we really did is we sat down with the professionals in this industry and said, can we take that process and can we digitalize it and make it really fit so that it could be used by everybody? It was a lot of work, tremendous amount of effort. But in the end, what we did is we were able to take most of those exercises and figure out a way to put them online, even some of the psychomotor exercises as well. By doing that, we now have the ability to broadcast it out for every single individual in the world. It's really tremendous. And by also doing that, we broke it down into very small chunks. We were able to get it down into a 10-minute exercise or a 5-minute exercise, a 15-minute exercise, so that students could go through it at their own pace, take the exercise, make sure that they did their best job as they were going through, but it's not scored the way a traditional test is, so it's very positive and reinforcing to them. The validation of that really, from a psychometric standpoint, is that it is about 96% as valid as a person-to-person test. So it has incredible reliability and validity on that basis. And so we're really proud that we were able to do that and hand it over to the students. Now, I think one thing is important to note here is that there's a lot of assessments that are looking to guide a student or judge who they are and then predict for them who they are and what they could become. If I could, I'll just take a couple of minutes here and just really tell the difference between an interest survey and an aptitude test. Interest surveys, one, it is a survey all the time, and almost everybody in the United States has taken one of these at one time or another. But those interest surveys or personality surveys will ask you questions like, do you like walking down city streets or do you like walking in the mountains? Do you like building cabinets or do you like coding on a computer? And on it will go, and it asks you all these different types of things. They're very effective tests for what they are. However, as we previously spoke, if you have an exposure gap, you don't know certain things even about yourself. Mm-hmm. So if I grew up in the inner city and I've never been to the mountains, how would I ever know if I like walking in the mountains? Or if I was even in a woodshop class at one point, but I had a really bad teacher, or I just didn't, I fell behind in school or whatever life circumstances. And so I said, I don't really like that because the experience was bad. Then that may not also speak to what I really am talented at. So evaluating interest is important. But it really gives a very narrow focus for an individual, and it actually reinforces stereotypes that we have and the biases that we bring. And so it's really important to break those. So an aptitude test is a genuine test. It is evaluating you based on performance. And what it is doing is exposing the different raw talents that you were born with. We're all born with talent. So it's very similar to your dominant and non-dominant hand or your dominant non-dominant eye. Those are things that we're born with. And if you are exposed to those things that really make those talents come out and flourish, then you do better naturally at those. Just like if you use your dominant hand for writing, it happens more easily than it does with your non-dominant hand. Now, in school, we take a lot of time to force students to use their non-dominant hand, if you will, or use their talents that they weren't naturally born with. And instead of building on those, because everybody can learn to write with their non-dominant hand, but it is incredibly painful, both mentally and physically, for us to use those things that we're not naturally talented with. We can do it, and over time, we can build those skills, and so it's really awesome that we can do that. But we should be focused on building students from what they really can give to the world, and it's awesome.
Mm-hmm. So when looking through, you know, some of the example resources, your system doesn't just spit out a report and says Scott's aptitude is that he should become a, you know, firefighter or college professor. What are the types of things that if I were an educator and I was looking at one of my students, what are the types of things that I might learn about them based upon the report?
Well, I'll answer this from my perspective, of course, but I'd love to hear Candace's response too, because she's right there working with the teachers every day. But very importantly, it really breaks down these talents and natural abilities that a student has, and it looks at all aspects of that. And so, as an example, numerical reasoning is an aptitude. Based on that aptitude, I may put on the layer of accountancy. Right? That may be a skill that comes off of that. But numerical reasoning is also important in probably 1,000 other careers. Mm-hmm. And so based on the combination of all of these different natural talents, we're able to line those up with careers that take advantage of those different talents and then lay those out because they're not singular. So a lot of times we think, oh, that person is talented in art, so they must be an artist, right? They're talented in welding, they must be a welder. But the reality is those skills come from a whole bunch of talents that are underneath that. So if I'm able to view things in my mind in 3D, that is a talent, right? That's an aptitude. Mm-hmm. So that can be applied both from an art perspective, a construction perspective. It can be applied to a surgeon. That's a critical skill that surgeons have, right? To be able to see how the heart is functioning or this organ or that organ and be able to get in there and fix things properly. So we're able then to show that to a student and line that up and say, you could do this, which is, say it's an engineer, or you could do this, which is in the medical field, or you could do this, which is in the energy sector, right? We give this exposure based on all of those talents. Mm-hmm.
So, Candace, turning to you now, if I were a student in your area being served by your ESC, how would I start to experience U Science? In other words, you know, is there a certain time point in my educational trajectory where I would take the aptitude test? And then what would happen to me after that in terms of how I might interact with a faculty member or a counselor?
Sure. Yeah, so we really encourage and support our schools. We're really fortunate. So we do have a pretty strong partnership with U Science. And I always tell some of the local folks, like, we're U Science's biggest fan. So we have a pretty large coverage of usage and support. And through that, we really encourage our schools to look at administering the assessment, typically sometime during the middle school years, mm-hmm. and then again during the high school, early high school years. That way we have really good data on students that we can continue to create those experiences. And with our schools, the way in which they deliver the next steps, it varies dependent upon school. We have some career navigators here at the Educational Service Center and in some of our schools that really support this, because there needs to be somebody in the school that owns it, that's going to be able to like work with kids on, you know, it's one thing to administer the assessment. It's one thing for us to look at the data at a regional perspective, but more importantly, it's okay, how do we sit down with students and analyze the data and work with teachers in better understanding who their students are? And then what's the action? What are we going to offer to kids beyond the initial assessment? And so when I was listening to Edson speak there and thinking about like Ohio specifically and the benefit that it has for Ohio students, I think about like use science, like really empowering the students to unlock their potential and design their future with like purpose and passion. I know I mentioned intentionality earlier, but by combining that aptitude-based assessment, there are a lot of interest surveys out there that Edson mentioned. There are a lot of different surveys and tests and assessments. What we like about U-Science is it is looking at an aptitude-based approach, and combining that with the career insights, it helps students really uncover their unique strengths and their natural talents and pathways that align with their personal interests and aspirations. So it's building that connection for our students. It goes beyond that traditional testing. It offers an individualized roadmap to students that's more about fulfillment and joy. It's not like, oh, here are some things that that exist in the world. We always say at Edson that students only know the careers that exist in their neighborhood or within their house. How do we really expose them? And that's exactly what U-Science allows us to do. It's really difficult to expose students to every career that exists in the world, but with U-Science, it really narrows that focus down to connect right with their aptitudes. And when I think about an individual student, when we're analyzing the data with them specifically, students are able to gain that clarity about who they are and how they can really thrive in the modern workforce. It connects their passions to the real world opportunities, which for students, it sparks that excitement about their future. And it equips them because the results when they come back, they're so strengths-based that it equips them with the confidence to pursue and to learn more about what it is that may be of interest to them.
So I want to go back. So I do want to talk about the individual student in just a second, but you made an important point that was also highlighted in the report that I read, that you're able to use the aggregate data from U-Science and have that be a way of opening dialogue with industry around Montgomery County, the Dayton area. Can you think of any examples where you've been able to uncover important nuggets of opportunity that really do connect to real-world needs in your community?
Yeah, so, it's been beautiful. For example, we're able to pull the data and we can say, specifically for, you know, like one of our like larger city districts here, we can say, hey, did you know that out of your current sophomore class, that 22% of your sophomores have an aptitude and interest in the health science field or in that area? Here are the top talents that we're seeing within this class of students. If we say that and we can pull that data at a middle school level, it really helps us create opportunity. So rather than have what we are seeing districts do now, rather than have a general lunch and learn or a general, hey, anybody interested in learning about skills trades, like you can come down to the auditorium from, you know, 9 to 10 today. All kids are going because they want to get out of class. So they're all going. Industry folks are frustrated because they've got kids in there that really aren't interested but are out of class. So now we're able to take that data and we're able to pull and say, okay, we're actually going to have a career fair that's specifically designed to all the careers within health sciences. We bring those industry partners in. We invite individual students specifically based on the U-Science data. So now the kids that are in that space are really interested. That's mm-hmm. that's something that brings them joy, or that they found like, oh, this is something that I'm good at, or this is a talent that I may have. So now it's that's intentionality. So industry folks are more engaged. They're excited because they're getting very specific kids. It's allowed us to create opportunities. Like as we've now been with YouScience for several years and really trying to work on creating that pipeline, it's exactly what we've been able to do. We've been able to find internships. We've been able to have job shadowing experiences. So it's well beyond just a source of data and then a career fair. But now it's very specific to individual talents and populations. And then as a county, we have a really strong business advisory council. And through that, we have an industry subcommittee. We have all kinds of different groups that work together. We're able to pull that data together. And then as a region, as a county, what do we want to create experience-wise to close that exposure gap and to give kids experiences? So it's not like, oh, I got to do this. I had this experience my senior year, or I had this experience now when I'm in college and I already have a year or two under my belt. And I decide that's not what I like, or that's not what really brings fulfillment to me. So we're starting to build that pipeline and give kids experiences and exposure early on so they can make some of those decisions and really narrow the opportunities of what it is that they may want to go into or do long term in their career.
Yeah, interesting. Candace spoke about the fact that in an ideal in Montgomery County, students are going to get, go through the assessment twice at different stages, middle school and then high school. Am I getting that right, Candace?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm going to play devil's advocate just for a second. One, you mentioned earlier that these aptitudes are things we're born with, like dominant hand and non-dominant hand, et cetera. One could make an argument that point you made about not being exposed to the mountains, so not being able to answer the question, could also be true for certain aptitudes. I'll use myself for an example. If you would have given me an aptitude test that had anything to do with mathematical reasoning up through my master's program in college, you would have said, go as far away from numbers as you can. And in my master's program, I took a statistics class with a really great teacher, as you and I were talking about before we hit the recording. She was personable. She made it relevant. And I literally switched from being a non-math person to having stats be my methodology, in graduate school and my PhD program. So people change over time. Have you as a organization been able to observe that changes? And then how do you account for, I don't even know how to ask this question, like how would your assessment account for the potential growth of a student where new aptitudes become unlocked for them?
Yeah, I think in your question is a really important distinction. So I'm going to call it out a little mm-hmm. bit because it's a little bit of a flaw, Scott, not that you have many. So yeah. There's just in this question right here. You said, I have an aptitude in math, right? And you use that as the example. Mm-hmm. Math isn't an aptitude. Math is a skill that's born out of different types of aptitudes. So there are a whole bunch of different ones. So examples of different aptitudes, for example, are idea generation, numerical reasoning, spatial visualization, sequential reasoning, inductive reasoning, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And what we see is that as we can measure this, so we'll give you an exercise that has you look at different numbers. And you're doing some predictive analysis of that just right in your head. It's a very simple exercise, but you do that. And then we'll give you another exercise that's a little bit different that does something to measure a different type of numerical viewing of things, right? Or different ways that you look at that. So we're measuring something deeper than the skills that are kind of sitting at the top. And this is hard for us to really understand over time because we've been taught so often from the time that we were young that you are talented in this thing, but the thing that it was a skill that's on top of an aptitude. So for me, for example, I was always very talented in the arts. And so from a young age, everybody told me, oh, you're going to be such a great artist someday. You're going to be doing this. But what that really was, if you look at my aptitudes, is it's about creativity that brings together certain types of aptitudes together. So for me, this comes out, and I love art, for example. I really do. but I love creating mechanisms that bring things together even more. That fulfills me. And I think that's one of the important things that happens as you connect students together based on aptitudes, or you connect them with a business leader, or you connect them with an educator that has those same types of aptitudes. Then all of a sudden the communication barriers break down. Mm-hmm. Right? That ability to gain friendship and a community that understands you flourishes, right? Because you're seeing the world through the same eyes. And so as we look at those aptitudes, we really have to break down some of those biases that we've already built. And that's one of the things that Candace mentioned that's so beautiful for students is sometimes for the very first time in their lives, they're seeing their pure, real strengths. And so many of them look at their results and they're like, I had no idea I could do mm-hmm. that because I thought I was bad at math, mm-hmm. right? Or I thought I was bad at this. Instead of, I have strengths in this area. I can reason numbers and so I'll be a great analyst. Mm-hmm. May not be a great mathematician, but I'll be a great analyst. And sometimes we compound or we conflate those two worlds. We say an analyst is math, right? Or this is that. And where we can really break those apart and separate them. So that's how it works.
One of the things I love about the way you describe that is it really does center then on the way that, you know, the counselor, the teacher, or whomever is talking to the student is helping them process that. It's really about the communication, you know, that goes on. Candace, in your partner schools and with your ESC, have you observed like what you maybe would refer to as effective practices on how the adult in the room, you know, can work with a student to help them make sense of what it is that they see on this report?
Yeah, I think this is twofold, Scott. It's really interesting to us. It's been a really cool journey because, you know, we always talk about, you know, when like teachers, for example, we continue to say teachers need to build career connections within all classrooms, all of the students' experiences in K-12. And so that's easy for us to say. However, when you think about a teacher and a teacher's journey, teachers went to school themselves as students, then they went to school to learn how to be teachers, and then they went back into a school building to teach kids. Mm-hmm. And so that's all they know as well. So when we talk about exposure gap, there's an exposure gap for adults as well. You know, the adults, the teachers that are working within a school system, they only know like what they know. And if we're talking teachers specifically, they know education really well because that's been their whole life that they've been a part of that. And then they may know like other careers that maybe exist within their household or within their family and, or within their social network. And so for us, it's been really beautiful when we think about the analysis part of the data. It's not just students and like the self-discovery component for students, but it's also been beautiful like for the adults to see what exists and what's out there and what are aptitudes and what does that mean. And so we, as an educational service center, we've really supported in our career navigation work, we've really supported schools and what is the best way to take this data and really like create action afterwards? And how do you really use the data? Everybody says use the data. Well, what does that really mean? What does that look like? And so we've hosted like these future self days. Like we've gone into schools and we, after kids have taken this assessment, we then create these like future self days where we're literally modeling for schools that this is new for. How do you analyze the data with kids? So we bring kids in, we have stations that kids go to and they're learning like what are aptitudes and what does this mean? What is spatial reasoning? What is all of this? And then we're analyzing their data with them. So when they're looking at their results, they actually can make even better sense of it. And teachers are in that space right alongside us. So teachers are learning as well. And we always tell all of our schools, the adults need to take the U-Science assessment as well. What we don't want is we don't want to lose our adults to other careers and other pathways, but we really want to empower them to see and learn about themselves a little bit more deeply. So then they can feel that energy, that emotion, that then when they're delivering this and working with students on analyzing the data, they're more apt and more prepared to do so. So we have these future self days in some settings and in some we may sit down and train the teachers and say, what is this about? What does this mean? How do you best utilize it? And then working. And then we've modeled, some of our career navigators will pull students and model, like, what does that counseling session potentially look like utilizing the data as the foundation? It's really important to us that we're utilizing the Youth Science assessment and the Youth Science platform and the Youth Science resources with all kids, mm-hmm. not just CTE, CTC-bound kids, not just college-bound kids, but all kids. Not just your at-risk kids, we're trying to figure out, okay, like, what can we prepare for them? But for all kids, and more preventive, like starting early on, so then it becomes a tool to create the experiences throughout the rest of their K-12 experience. But I would say the future self days, the coaching, the modeling, all of that has been really powerful. And what's even more beautiful is when kids like learn so much about themselves, kids that may have very little confidence or feel as though they don't have any hope, really starting to like, oh, I didn't know, as Edson mentioned, like, oh, I didn't know. I always thought I was bad at math, but I do actually have this talent. Mm-hmm. This is what this means. Just making the results come to life for kids.
Scott, can I make two comments on what Candace said? Because she brought up two really important points. One was about the laws that come out. I guess she put it as, we really want every class to talk about careers and embed that. Across the United States, that's a movement because there's such a huge labor shortage that every legislature across the entire country is focused on this problem. Mm-hmm. And so they come up with a law that says, okay, meaning educators, need to embed career education in everything that you do. And as Candace brought that up, it causes a huge problem for those teachers because they were teachers, right? That's mm-hmm. what they chose to do. So when they're asked, this is the common question that every student asks, you know, why am I learning this today? And teachers have a hard time answering that because of what Candace said. They were taught to be teachers, not to be firefighters or not to be engineers or this or that. And so answering that becomes really a challenge. At this point now, if they have that data, they could say, okay, student, what I want you to do, instead of me answering that, I would like you to go back to your U-Science results. And I want you to look at the careers that are recommended for you across the board. And I want you to tell me how English, learning a language, is going to benefit you in that career. And then come back and report that to me. Mm-hmm. Because it's really unfair to ask a teacher that's teaching English to say what the careers are in all these different areas. But now we can put it back on the student and help empower them to find those answers, because we give a lot of detailed information where they're going to be able to find those types of things about their results. And the second thing is, how does this really empower best practices for industry participating in some of this? Businesses want to align with education. They desperately want to, but for years they just haven't been able to, and they've been blocked from doing so. And so now there's a way to communicate and talk with employers that engages them right in the process. Because now, as Candace said, we can pull reports and say, for your business, here are the exact students that may meet your needs. And because of that, come and talk with those students and see what flourishes out of that. And it becomes so much more empowering for both groups that it really is great that way.
You know, it strikes me, you know, I was talking before, again, we started the recording, about how when we were going through school, these pathways and these pipelines were a bit more obvious, I think, anyway. I mean, you had certain subjects, you had certain majors in college, and they corresponded to job titles, and it was pretty clear what you went into. It's very different now. Even if you take a sector like healthcare, you know, the aptitudes that would align with different specialties within healthcare might look very different even within that sector. So it's more complicated. I wonder, you know, and either of you can take a stab at answering this, as the job world becomes more complicated for various reasons because of specialization, technology, et cetera, et cetera, it seems like the permutations of different aptitudes that could lead into various careers is going to also become more complicated. What that might mean for me, if I have a certain cluster of aptitudes that I score very highly on, I may have different options, you know, of sectors that I could go into, ranging, you know, from healthcare to business to education, et cetera. I just wonder, you know, how even armed with data like this, we continue to navigate that career pipeline issue, because it's changing as we're implementing the data, you know, literally much faster.
Candace, would you like to take a first crack? If not, I'm happy to.
Yeah, Edson, I'll let you go first, and then fill in if I have anything.
Sounds good. A couple of different ways. So yes, the world of our world is changing at more rapid pace all of the time. And years ago, I wouldn't say that we were better at it, Scott, at directing people. We just generalized more. Yeah, so we'd say, this is a category of skill. This is a category of skill, without the understanding or into our school systems that there were a lot of nuances there. So today we do a much better job across the entire country of doing career education in all things. And I think I'll just pull this out really quickly. We used to separate academics from career and tell people, okay, you're on this career track, which really meant that you were the woodshop kid, right? Mm-hmm. Versus the academic track, which you were college bound. That's complete garbage, right? Every career is a career track, right? I mean, it's just ridiculous to think otherwise. In fact, most of our doctors go through residency. Residency is an apprenticeship. That's what it is. And we need to be thinking about that in those types of terms. And when we put it into those terms, coming back to that question, now we're able to see, okay, if I have these aptitudes that can apply in different areas, right? I'm not just focused on this one type of career. I can really build the skills underneath that and based on those aptitudes, and I can build up in those areas. So if I have really great inductive reasoning, for example, I can really look at patterns really well, if that's one of my stronger areas. And I could apply that to a lot of different situations, right? So I could look at that from, again, an analyst kind of perspective, or I could look at that from a weather perspective in the weather field. I could look at it in different areas. I even get held up sometimes because I don't know all the jobs and I do this for a living, right? And that's part of the problem. So as we build up we build on our talents, it actually gives us way more flexibility to meet the demands of the future careers. A lot of times we talk about, well, we need to build soft skills, right? And sometimes they're called durable skills. They've been called all sorts of things over the years. But they're those skills that allow us to communicate well, to show up to work on time, to have good critical thinking. But the reality is, all of those are really part of underneath our aptitudes, if you will, and then we leverage our aptitudes to do critical thinking and the things that we do well. To ask somebody to do critical thinking in an area that they're not, don't have that natural talent for, is really hard. And that it comes out as an example. We use this all the time. Some people are book smart, some people are street smart. And really what that is it's a manifestation of some of those natural talents and your environment, but it has a lot of those natural talents that come into play. And so again, if you're able to recognize that and say, okay, I can leverage these talents not only to be on the street and be smart, but I could leverage that to be in this type of industry or that type of industry, it gives you a broader opportunity to really move around as careers mm-hmm. change.
Candace, you want to add anything?
I just want to say 100% agree with what Edson just mentioned. We know that the look of the jobs is different. We know that that's ever changing, but it's really the talent, the bolstering the talents, helping students see who they are and what their talents are, and really focusing on that as well as the skills alongside.
I think the last question that just builds on what we've just been talking about. Candace, going back to you, have you been able to notice a broader cultural shift in your, you know, partner districts and the way that you're working with students? I mean, I get the sense in hearing you talk about it that this has been a big but very positive change for how you're working with students. Have you started to see that, you know, I don't know, shift other aspects of the culture that is in your community?
Yeah, Scott, I could probably talk about this for days in multiple categories, but I'll focus on student engagement because I think that's the big thing for us is like the engagement of our students and the confidence component. So when I think about like the results that we're seeing around student engagement in general have been nothing short of inspiring. With U-Science, the students are not just checking the boxes. They're leaning in to the process. They're excited to uncover more about who they are and where they're headed. And this shift is from passive participation to more of an active engagement, which is opening doors for meaningful self-discovery and sparking curiosity about their future. So when we think about like the power that that has had, that's what excites me the most. We're seeing students light up when they connect their natural talents to real world careers that they've never considered before. Maybe they didn't even know like there was that was even an option for them. They're asking deeper questions. So when we do some like informational interviews where we're really instead of an industry asking the questions, we have the students prepare the questions. So we're seeing students asking deeper questions because they know what to ask versus just surface level. Seeking opportunities to explore their interests further, showing a newfound ownership over their futures. It's a transformation moving from what, you know, we used to think about like students, asking students, what do I want to be when I grow up? But more to like students saying, this is who I am and this is how I can make a difference. That's been the cool student engagement shift that I would say is most profound. And then beyond the individual excitement, it's that collective energy because we have like this has been a huge force for us. It took more years than what we ever wanted, but it's that collective energy that's been most contagious. Classrooms are buzzing with intentional conversations about skills and passions and pathways. Teachers and counselors are noticing an increase in confidence in their students, like as they discover their own strengths. So it fits into a bigger picture, more broad picture. When you think about, I think Edson opened up with just when you think about like attendance, students graduating, like all those come to play in when we're thinking about student engagement. So that's the piece that I would say is probably most inspiring and exciting on the adults or with the adults, as well as most importantly with our kiddos.
Edson, Candace is clearly pleased with, you know, what she's experiencing in her district. What makes you excited about, you know, what it is that your company is providing and looking into the future? I mean, I'm sure that you do not have the perspective that what you're doing now is enough. What do you want to do next?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, it's exactly what Candace talked about. The engagement of students is absolutely fulfilling, right? It does change lives in dramatic ways, and it fuels everything that we do as a company. And we have a long ways to go. So a couple of things that really drive us is how do we get this more and more into the hands of more and more students? And of course, that, yes, that fuels company growth, but really it's a mission for us of how to do this. The other thing that we really are focused on is how do we make it easier for the educators to implement this tool. Candace mentioned that it's really critical to have the educators take the aptitude test as well, because if they don't, their understanding of the power of it is very limited. One of the things that we get a lot of pushback on across the country is that the aptitude test takes a little bit of time. It's about, right now it's a 90-minute test, and we have psychometricians constantly looking at it to see if we can pare that down better and better. But that takes about 2 full days of class time for a teacher to work that through their lesson plans and things like that. And a lot of districts around the country will say that's too much time. Mm-hmm. We have too much to do. We have way, you know, we have this and this and this. But, and Candace said it took a while to get that into the system and working through to the point where it's generating a buzz and it's generating excitement. And And so what we would say to people and what we're working on is how do we make this and how do we empower teachers to implement it faster, better, in a more effective way. But I would also ask every educator across the country to say, what will impact your students and their future results, both in school and in life, more than this? Mm-hmm. And there's literally almost nothing else that can impact them this dramatically, outside of family, right? And some of those things. So I would really encourage people to look at that. But that's also the area that we're focused on. Probably one other area is strengthening even greater the connection with industry. So we are constantly working on that problem as well. It's a real challenge because, as Candace said, you know, people know what's around them, right? And so we also, most of the time, people are taking jobs from the areas around them. And so to get all of those employers in those local areas onto the platform so that they are making this kind of connection with the students through the platform in a very safe and manageable way. That's a challenge, right, to get everybody there. We could upload databases of companies all the time. But for students, Scott, you and I were talking about this, the personalization of education and those connections means everything to the student. And so having local employers on the platform that the students say, oh, I drove by that business. Oh, I recognize that sign. Right. That makes a difference for the students. And they all of a sudden they start to see themselves in those companies in a real dramatic way. So that's probably the next biggest thing that we're working on is really strengthening that inside the platform.
I want to take a moment just to commend the two of you as guests. You came into this podcast not knowing each other, and this has been such a great conversation that it feels like we've, you know, been doing it for years and just got together to record it. So I thank you both for your time, and I also have to say, as a host, it's always refreshing when I see people that are so passionate about finding ways to unlock the future for students. And it's clear that that's at the forefront of both of your minds. And that's really exciting. And I hope that that serves as a motivation for others in similar situations to want to have that same opportunity with their students. So thank you for your time. It's been great to get to know both of you.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you for creating the space for us to have this conversation. And Edson, thank you for continuing to help support our kids and helping them be future ready.
Yeah, and I would say the same thing, Scott. Thank you. And really the biggest thanks needs to go to Candace and all of the educators and administrators that are trying to implement this in our school systems, not just our program, but it's really doing the best thing for our kids. It's an incredibly hard job. It's very fulfilling, but it's also very hard. And we need to thank our educators more.
Absolutely. If you're interested in learning more about this, there is a report that was published by YouScience. I'll have a link to that in the text accompanying the podcast. That report talks about the Montgomery County solution, but also the guests in the next podcast on Teaching Matters will be from North Point Education Service Center and also Danbury Local Schools, both of which are also in the state of Ohio, but different in the scope and the type of organizations that they are from Montgomery County. So you'll hear different stories, I'm sure. Anyway, if you want to find out more, you can find that report in the text accompanying the podcast and follow that link. My guests today have been Candace Sears. She's the Director of Instructional Services at Montgomery County ESD. Near Dayton, Ohio, and also Edson Barton, who's the CEO and co-founder of YouScience. If you want to reach out to the podcast, please feel free to do so at our email address, Teaching Matters Podcast, all one word, all lowercase, at ohio.edu. And also, you can reach out to us on social media platforms. I want to give special thanks to Trinity Sweet and April Koska, assistant producers of the podcast, for all that they do behind the scenes. Thank you for listening, and we hope everyone has a great day. We'll be right back.